Hello and welcome to the seventh in this series of interviews where we explore Thrive Worldwide's nine principles of individual thriving. It's Jake here. I'm Thrive's head of marketing and communications. And as you probably know by now, I'm sharing these interviews to help you think about what these principles mean for you and for our clients. And in this episode, the principle we're going to explore is this.
It is possible for people to thrive in the midst of pain and impossibly difficult circumstances.
That's Graham Forster. Of course, he's our Director of Psychosocial Services. And in the interview you're about to hear, he'll tell me what he's learnt from his own experiences of pain and difficult circumstances. He'll tell me how he tries to show the reality of this principle to his clients. He'll talk about the importance of finding hope in dark times. And he'll tell me how poetry can help illuminate our understanding of this principle. But I began by asking Graham why he thinks this principle is so important.
For me personally, and also in my clinical practice, it points to the fact that people don't need to be overwhelmed by their circumstances. They can still have a life that's worthwhile, that's vibrant, that's exciting, even when facing these incredibly difficult circumstances. And I think we need to be able to maintain that attitude, that approach to life, so that we are in a position where we can cope with our circumstances, deal with our circumstances, and sometimes win over the circumstances as well. But we need to do that from a place of gratitude and hope.
And then I know you have a sort of a personal experience that can attest to the truth of this principle. Is that right?
That's right, yes. So I'm a cancer survivor. Some years ago, a melanoma that had been fixed by an operation came back quite aggressively. And the doctors were a bit glum, but hopeful, and told me that probably my life expectancy was about 3 months unless a series of procedures that they were going to do worked. But the probability that they would work was very low. The good news is that that was some 15, 20 years ago, so clearly they did work. But for about 3 months and then for a further 6 or 7 months, my life expectancy was very short indeed. And I found myself with some choices in that. I could either literally lie down and wait to die, which was quite a tempting thing to do, or I could live in hope and think about what I wanted to leave behind and what I wanted to accomplish. And there are some very, very practical things that I remember doing in that time. My wife and I planted some flowers and seeds and vegetables, which were due in about 6 or 8 months' time, as a sign of hope, really, that I'd be around to harvest them. And also took the opportunity, I'd had a book to write, which had been delayed and delayed because I was too busy doing terribly important other things. And I decided, no, now is the time to write the book. And so my little book, Still in the Darkness, which is indeed about hope in the presence of hopelessness, was written and published in that 3 month time frame, which I was very pleased about. And I remember writing it with a sense of delight and pleasure that things would be left behind if everything went wrong.
What would you say now, so having been through that, what would you say now to maybe somebody who is going through that kind of thing right now?
I probably wouldn't tell them my story, I have to say. I remember being really annoyed by people who gave me their good news cancer stories and me thinking, well, it's all right for you. the odds are still against me. What I'd encourage them to do is to find hope where they are. What can they enjoy today? What will take their mind off the despair that they will be feeling? So finding hope and little moments of gratitude in each day, which does give our mood a boost. Crucially, it helps our immune system as well. We need every bit of our immune system to be firing on all cylinders when we're in these sorts of circumstances. And so these are all immune system boosters as well. So it's hope and gratitude in the midst of all of this, which the paper that we're talking about gives us. Hope is incredibly important. Point six gives us a reason to get up in the morning. And it exists, as I discovered, even in the context of a life-threatening health condition. And that's a very, very real phenomenon. We see a lot of stories about people fighting cancer, fighting serious disease. It's a nice thought. Psychologically, we're more interested in trying to help people not give up, because the moment they do give up, their immune system and every other part of their biology collapses, and the aggressive whatever it is has more opportunity to grow continue its devastating pathway.
Graham, I assume part of your job at Thrive involves supporting people who are, you know, as these words say, in the midst of pain and impossibly difficult circumstances. How do you, in your work, how do you try to show these people the reality of this thriving principle?
I get them to do homework. We can debate this forever. I've just come off a call from a gentleman in an incredibly difficult circumstance in a part of the world which is truly oppressive. And I gave him some homework. He works 10-hour, 15-hour days at the moment trying to keep the darkness back, as it were. And I just encouraged him at the end of our call not to go straight back to his emails or run on to his terribly important meeting, but just to take 30 seconds, to look out the window and see something outside that's nice or beautiful, or go and make himself some tea or get a juice. Just take a breath, take a moment before running on to the very next thing that's so terribly urgent. So I give all of my people that I talk to, I give them these mini homeworks to do, and then in my next session with them, ask them how it went, and inevitably they come back and say, gosh, that really helped.
One thing that's helped me, you know, when I'm experiencing some kind of negative emotion, is this. So there's a poem by Rumi, who's this, I don't know when he was a kind of mystic Muslim from centuries ago, and it's called The Guest House, and I'm just going to read it out because I'm curious to know. So, you know, it's a bit of art, and it speaks to me, but I'm quite interested to hear your kind of reaction to it, a sort of psychological perspective. So I'm just going to read it out, see how it lands with you, and then get your view afterwards, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honourably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. How does that sit with you as a trained psychological professional?
I love poetry. It often gets through poesis to the depths of what's actually going on and speaks to our condition in ways that science sometimes can't connect with. And I love two things about this. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. This speaks to me of post-traumatic growth. People who do survive extraordinarily difficult circumstances, many go on to find their lives transformed in a positive way. They find that they are more accepting of other people's condition, more attuned to suffering, more empathic, more connected to the world as a whole, more concerned with momentary beauty that they come across, which leads to a quite extraordinary life in a way. But it's a life that they wouldn't have had they not experienced what the poet is talking about. And the other thing that is crucial, which our paper talks about, but the poet also alludes to, is acceptance of the condition. Not to give up, not to give in, but to accept that there is sometimes in our lives a period of lamenting, of sadness, of grief, and to accept that as a process which is helpful. And as we go through that process, we can begin to find new joy, new ways of thriving, new ways of flourishing in our life. We never forget completely the dreadful things that happened to us or might have happened to us, but we do move on from them, from into a position of strength. But in order to do that, we have to accept the situation that we are in. We really, really are oppressed. We really are extremely unwell. We really are on the wrong end of a grief that's all consuming. And to sit, to allow ourselves to sit with that for a period, but it's a dynamic sitting. We sit with it so that we can move through it into something that's beyond.
That was our Director of Psychosocial Services, Graham Fawcett, there discussing the seventh principle of individual thriving. It's possible for people to thrive in the midst of pain and impossibly difficult circumstances. In the next episode, we'll discuss the principle thriving individuals for meaningful and loving connections with friends, family, and their community. Until then, bye for now.